Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels.
Full Chat is powered by Bikeshaw as the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and so much more.
So please don't forget to press your follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from, and you can watch the whole show right now on YouTube. Go on, watch it.
Okay then, our special guest today is a lady who's been reporting on the Isle of Man TT for years. A lady who hails from the island, is manx and proud, and has bike racing in her blood. Here to give us a little wrap of this year's TT races, it's Hayley Coxham.
Good morning. Yay. Hello, how are you?
Thank you for joining us, because obviously you've had a crazy time of it. I mean, I think the racing finished on Saturday. Have you managed to get your breath back?
Not quite, hence the tired eyes.
But the buzz of the TT is just crazy. It must take a while to come down from that, I'm assuming, even as a spectator.
Oh, it's commonly known that we all suffer from the TT blues, and you've already seen many riders post, even on Saturday, saying that they've hit home already. So, we'll go through the TT blues for a little while once we start to process it, really. I've still got a couple of commitments this week, and then I'm sure it'll start to sink in, but... Yeah, the weather was a challenge for everyone here this year, especially because last year we had a TT like I've never seen before. Every single day was amazing. So I think it kind of put people in false sense of security, including new fans and like old fans as well. We just hoped for the best again this year, but the weather was difficult and difficult on the schedule for all the guys, but the racing was still incredible. So yeah, we witnessed some amazing days of racing here. So yeah, it was special to be a part of.
Just before we get stuck into what's happened this particular year, Hayley, I've got visions now of where you are, because you're on the Isle of Man now talking to us. Is it akin to what you see off the back of a festival, just thousands of people making their way to all the different forms of transport to get back onto the mainland? Is it a mass exodus?
It is, really, yeah. I mean, you get the odd few who will make it, you know, like the Europeans who have ridden like thousands of miles, wherever they've come from. You know, I met a couple who were wonderful, come from Argentina. Wow. It's people from all over the world that come. We had so many Australians and Americans wouldn't have necessarily ridden here. They've flown here, but then they might fly into the UK, hire a bike, bring a bike over, or get a bike on the island. And some of them make it a longer trip, but generally it is like that festival vibe where you like, you walk up the grandstand now, the TT grandstand, and it's, you know that something's happened, but it's kind of like the ghost of the TT past, really. That's just lying around, all the tents getting broken down, and a lot of the trucks have already gone because, you know, some of these guys are racing in BSB, which is this weekend. We got to be at Knockhill Wednesday, Thursday. So that next race championship kicks off again in a couple of days. So they got to get going again. And they got to move. Not much downtime for them, really.
And what's it like on the island in terms of the general split of the population? I'm assuming you get some people who don't like the craziness of the TT, and others think it's obviously amazing for tourism and it brings excitement and world coverage to where you live. I mean, what's the general feel? I'm assuming it's all excitement.
It's mixed, actually. A lot of people love it and stay for it. A lot of people will book a holiday and get away and rent their homes out, because now a big thing here is, you know, when I grew up here, I grew up in a hotel. So our business lived for the people of the TT, bringing the business to the island, as do many businesses survive on that now. But accommodation wise, it's changed a hell of a lot over the last 20 years. So you got homestays is a big thing. So you come back, you come here, stay in homestays, you stay in campsites, there's glamping, there's all sorts of stuff. So the population apparently increases half of what it is. So it's around about 88,000. So they reckon the amount of people we attract is about half of the population that is already across the fortnight, across the time of the TT period, so, which is massive. So a lot of locals can't deal with the traffic, can't deal with that busyness. You know, some things might go a little bit dearer than other times of the year. Mm-hmm. So they just get fed up with it and get away away from the chaos, including my dad, my stepdad. He hates it. So he goes off to his place in Spain and enjoys his chill time and gets away from the craziness.
You mentioned, I mean, it's amazing to hear someone that's actually from there, because obviously it's a mecca and it's a real magnet for everyone that loves this type of motorsport. And to be from there, and schooled and brought up and educated, and no wonder you can see the passion that just comes flying out of you when you talk about it. Is it Is it fair to say it was your granddad, though, that got you into bikes?
Well, yeah, it was. So my biological dad and my granddad were into the bikes, but I didn't really grow up with them. So they were here. Granddad was originally from the Isle of Man, but he got an opportunity to get a business in the States in the 80s, and he bought into the business, went over, and my dad moved to work with him. And then when he came back, so we went for a year. Dad had bikes over there, granddad had bikes. And I remember that and just thinking how freaking cool they were. Mom, like, stay away, they're too dangerous. And so we eventually came back to the Isle of Man. And granddad, when he started coming back a bit, he bought like an old American Harley. He got this old, a police Harley. He even got the helmet and the jacket. And I thought it was super cool. And so I, whenever I hear a Harley now, whenever I hear it getting fired up, I'm like, ah, that's great. And then he came back with like this Corvette. I think it was a Z3 or something like that. I remember thinking that was super cool. So I got a bit of an obsession with American muscle cars and American sports cars, really. Yeah, so that granddad was into it, dad was into it, but I didn't grow up with them, but I was still drawn to it, even though I grew up with the side of the family that was telling me to stay away from them. And then hence why later on in life, I'm like really feeding my fueling my fire or my passion for bikes now. And I'm not getting any younger, but my mind definitely is. But whatever, that's what bikes are all about, aren't they? It's just getting out and living it and enjoying it.
Immature people like us, that's what they're for. Yeah.
I love your passion. You can hear it. Prat said a minute ago, you can hear it when you talk about not just the Isle of Man TT, but bikes. And, you know, we often ask people this, you know, given your dream car or your dream bike and it's a warm, sunny day, which one are you going to use? Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming for you on the island there, it would be a bike, because there's nothing quite like, is it? The senses and the feelings it brings you, it's so special. And non-bikers don't understand it.
Yeah, it's the freedom of it. And you can't describe it. I don't think you can do it justice describing it. And I'd say the same about the TT until you've actually experienced it. And if bikes aren't for you, that's fine. That's cool. You'll find your own thing. But when you do get a taste for bikes, I don't think there's any real going back. Even if you do fall off or get injured, or, you know, you see some of the guys on around the paddock that have used to race a couple of decades ago. And even now that, you know, their body's really giving in, you know, there's a guy that he's a former world champion, a sidecar world champion. He stays with Chris, who owns Three Wheeling. Adolf, he's a character, he's got some stories to tell, but he's been hobbling around TT, and I'm like, what? And he's just had a prosthetic top half of his leg put in because it's worn, you know, through the injuries he's had. Eventually worn in over the year, and he's like, but he still wants to be here. He doesn't want to be in a chair. He wants to be walking around, and he wants to be in the midst of it. And that's what he is. He guides people who come over in packages to experience the TT. And yeah, it's nuts, but you understand it when you get it.
Yeah, I was just going to say quickly, because you mentioned it there, we'll talk about the racing in a minute, but in terms of the different classes and the races, I have so much respect for anyone who takes on the race there, but the sidecar athletes, they throw themselves around so much. I mean, they have to be slightly bonkers, because they're just hanging on. They're trusting the rider so much, and the way they throw their body and maneuver it from side to side and distribution of weight, that's a workout and a half. No wonder that chap's walking around broken, because that's hard.
I know, right? It's completely mental. I had to go a taxi ride last year at Cadwell Park, luckily enough, and it was a massive shock to my system because I was so excited to do it. I was screaming in the helmet as I first went out, and the first like, "Whoa, yeah!" You know, like, loved it. And then by the end of the first lap, my body, I literally couldn't feel it. I'm like, "Oh my god, can I do this second lap? I can't even see whether I'm actually holding on." Feel with them holding on. So I had to like keep looking down to make sure I could see that I was holding on still. The thought of them doing learning over 260 corners around a 37.73 mile course public roads, it's not a track, it's just blows my mind. I can't grasp how they do it. But the trust between the two, you know, it's been really interesting to see a few newcomers come on board this year for the sidecars. And hearing their journey and the trust that obviously they have to have in each other, the driver and the passenger, that's super important. But then there was a family set up there, Alan Founds and Reese Gibbons. And Alan's tried new passages the last couple of years and it's not quite worked, but they've just really gelled as uncle and nephew. There's something there that's just clicked and they just smashed it. And the newcomer to be on the podium was quite ridiculous and amazing. So they did fantastic together.
A couple of bits that you've touched on just as we started chatting here, you and you're talking about these men that are kind of hobbling around the paddock and that kind of vibe. Two questions. We've had Peter Hickman on the podcast before, as a fellow that you know very, very well, and he was wonderful company. And you mentioned about crashes and spills and all that. And then we saw with his on Saturday, but getting up and seemingly being okay from what we gather. And I think you might have bumped into him over the course of that particular weekend. It does just go to show, doesn't it, how obviously it's unbelievably dangerous, but it's not just the riders. When we spoke to Hickey about people watching on, his family. Do you get that vibe when you are in and around the paddock of maybe a bit of hypertension when you see them wheel up to the start, then they bomb off, don't they? And that's it. It's what, 17, 18 minutes worth of hell for leather kind of buckling up and going flying around it. Is there a sense of tension? Is there a sense of apprehension in and around the families that you can quite tangibly pick up on?
Yeah, it's very, I don't know, how would I describe it? It's unlike anything I've experienced in any paddock before or even on any starting grid because, like, you on the starting grid at BSB or I've worked in GTs and I don't want to use the word somber, but there is, like, this unusual energy that you only experience at the TT because, you know, like, I've done some work with Glenn Irwin over TT. Mm. He's currently leading the British Superbike Championship. Won the last 11 superbike races at the Northwest 200 in Northern Ireland. He's a phenomenal rider. I believe he will very likely be champion this year. But he even, you know, what stopped him from coming back to TT, who's fastest newcomer ever in 2022. But what stopped him coming back was the thought of he was getting up in the morning, he was having breakfast with his two kids. He's got three now. But the thought of not maybe having dinner with them at the end of the day and he was actually thinking that way. And he said he spoke to John McGuinness about it. And John McGuinness has said he expected him to say he didn't think that way. But John said, no, I do. And I get it. What you learn to get over it and live with it and work through it and find a way to live with it. Because, you know, there's a bigger picture that you're aiming at for here. So, yeah, that energy is unlike I've ever experienced anywhere in the world. But it is because we don't know whether we'll see them come back in. That is part of it. But even as a spectator, we can watch the race in some mental places and it's incredible. But again, you know, like the year that Conor Cummins came off and broke almost every bone in his body, he's a local rider. He went off the mountain and you see it in that Closer to the Edge documentary. You see him crash off. And I was at an area called just after Crosby Leap. I was on a hedge in the field that year watching part of it. I remember him pushing so hard and I was getting a great video. It was a brilliant video that I got, but he was pushing so hard and wobbling towards me. I just thought, I'm stupid to stay here because it doesn't feel safe. It doesn't feel, you know, and it's the same spectator. It's the thrill of it. It's still part of that thrill. And I guess once they've tasted it, most of them find it very difficult to not come back. And that is just part and parcel of the whole picture of it.
I was going to ask that because obviously the riders, that they have such an amount of belief in their natural talent and how hard they work. And often in sport, it's the people on the sidelines, it's more nerve-wracking, isn't it? Not taking part because they're laser focused. You know, it's the people who are watching. But when you say about some of the riders have said to you, like, you know, they do worry about their families and the consequences if they make a mistake. You think of someone like Michael Dunlop now that he's taken his uncle's record, when does a TT rider say, that's enough? You know, I've done it. I've smashed all the records now. I have to think of safety first. Or do they not think like that? I mean, when would someone like Michael say, I'm going to retire? It is a dangerous sport. Or is it not in their psyche to think of the danger? They've just got to keep going. They want more.
I think most of them in general don't allow that to overshadow their psyche because of their hunger and strive for the sport. So, you know, if they know that, like, for someone like Guy Martin, you know, you'll know of Guy Martin, who's now kind of like a TV personality, isn't he? But he was amazing to interview and have in the paddock. You'll need characters like that in the paddock, but he was never really winning. And then he had a big crash again the same year as Connor. And, you know, he was never really getting there. And then he got the opportunity to go off and start this TV career. And some of the stuff he's doing is fantastic. So he did get to a point and go, no, I'm done. I'm going to hang my leathers up. You know, he wasn't never really getting there. He wasn't really winning. So what was the point in the risk, really, which you can understand, but it's very rare that you see them do that. especially at the top of the game. Someone like Michael Dunlop, he's got to come back now and make the 30. That's going to be the hunger he's got in his belly now, isn't it? Is he wants to hit. He could have done 30. He could have got to 30 this weekend if it last week if the superbike would have worked for him, but and sadly it didn't. But to even get to 29 wins at the TT, you know, he's not going to stop anytime soon. He hasn't got any children either. You know, he's got a partner, and maybe it would change if he was to have children. Mm. Maybe it would. I don't know.
I think given as well, Hayley, you mentioned there about the familial element of the Dunlops as well. I won't say cast a shadow, but you can't understand one without the other, can you? You talk about the record set by Joey, his uncle, 24 years ago. So then if he does get to 30, that could be a generational stand of a record, couldn't it? Which sports people, there is, I suppose, they potentially do get to that age where legacy comes into it. So like you say, he's potentially, I mean, this is me trying to second guess a genius, that, yeah, get me to 30. That could stand for an awfully long time, couldn't it?
Well, I mean, look at his Joey's. Joey stood for so long. Mm. The last race he raced in here was 2000. So, I mean, even what he's got now, that can stand. But the 30, like you say, it's even more a phenomenal leap. And that will, I can't see many achieving that in any time soon. Because even John McGuinness, where he's at with it, I think he's at 23 or 24 wins. He's probably not got any wins left in him now. I think podiums for sure, but winning, I don't think so. So he's not going to surpass that in any way. So yeah, what that family has, the imprint it's made on motorsport is, again, another one is very difficult to compute too, isn't it? Like, wow. And I mean, to have a surname like Dunlop and then to...
yeah. I was like... What else were they going to do? Come on.
We were saying before, though, Hayley, myself and Props were saying before we came on air about, in terms of to the uneducated who might watch motorbike racing or the TT in particular, some of them may not necessarily look like athletes visually. If you look, like McGuinness, I'm not being rude, you might see him, you say that's not a professional sportsman, but wow, how fit they are. They are athletes to go through what they go through, not just physically, but the mental, you know, strain they put themselves through during the TT is unbelievable. And you say the Dunlop family, that is a very talented family, which people might not on the outside understand just how good they are.
Yeah, I completely agree. John McGuinness is the fittest as well at the minute, I think. Yeah. He's been but even like Michael Dunlop, I mean, he's not been too bothered about his fitness. He's been extremely bike fit. You know, that's the thing, is the key here is being bike fit for a course like the mountain course, the TT mountain course. But Michael this year, he looks fit. I don't think I've ever seen him look so fit. So he's obviously bang on everything for getting himself to where what he achieved this TT, and he deserved it, definitely.
Another one that had a good spell over there. Davey Todd announced himself at the top table. It was a brilliant TT victory in the senior race on Saturday, quite rightly over the moon as well. Another one of the kind of heartwarming stories that come out of this wonderful kind of collection of people that come and swamp the island and hopefully come back heroes, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. Davey deserved that. And the team, I think that the team's first win since something like 2002, something like that. Mm. I might have got that wrong. But Tass Racing, who's racing with, and it's the Milwaukee Senior TT that he won, who's on the Milwaukee Tills bike. But yeah, it was an emotional win. He deserved it. I think he won it by almost 40 seconds or something as well. He the lead that he had on them in the end. But he was so committed, and, you know, the last couple of TTs not quite worked out for him. A couple of TTs ago was on the back of the Northwest 200 when the tyre issue happened, when the tyres degraded, and they had huge issues with the tyres they were using. And so that happened at the TT for him as well, as the speeds that they're going and his tyres started to degrade. As he was racing around the Alman TT course, that's going to affect your mindset, isn't it? But he still managed to finish on the podium. And then last year, he got that mad virus, as did his teammate Connor, and he just got so sick and it just wasn't physically capable for him to do it. So this year he was ready. You could see it. I could see him being on that top step as well, and others could do as well. And when Hickey and Michael Dunlap went out in that superbike race, it was like, right, it's yours. You know, you've just got to make sure the bike holds out. You've got to stay in, and he did it. So I'm really happy for him. He deserves it. And I truly believe there's so much more to come from him. You know, it's very likely that someone like David Todd will, all being well, would be able to challenge eventually Michael Dunlap for that top spot and the wins over the years. So we'll see, hopefully in touch wood for him, that all of this keeps progressing the way that he deserves it to progress.
You made a point there. It was quite interesting. I think I was listening to talk there, and we talk about the skill level of the riders and the utter faith they have in themselves, but they have to have total faith in their crew, their team, their bikes, because we saw it with, you know, with Michael's visor issue. You know, things can go wrong, and if it does go wrong, obviously it can be catastrophic during a race, but you have to rely on everything to run smoothly, don't you? You have to have full trust in your bike.
Absolutely. And you know, these guys will, even if they move teams, they'll tend to bring some of their crew with them. You know, they'll want to have the same crew chief, the same mechanic, or whatever. You know, the setup needs to be one that they feel surrounded by, the people that they want to be surrounded by, so they feel fully confident on that bike, and when they head out, it's what they want. You know, it's, I think there was probably difficulties there for Davey with Padgett's. They did well, but then just wasn't event coming together in the end. And then when he stepped away from Ren, the setup that he's got this year, I think it all just came together for him, and rightfully so. It's, yeah, it was an emotional winner's enclosure and bloody fantastic to witness.
Any of the highlights from this year's get together, Hayley, that jump out for you other than the ones we've spoken about?
I've got to talk about the sidecars, haven't I? Just, we had local boys on the top step for the first time. The Crowe brothers, Ryan and Callum Crowe, were amazing, and they took both wins. We had just two races at the TT this year, and they had, and both they won, and they were on it. And the challenger was going to be the Birchall Racing team, but Ben Birchall's passenger has always been his brother Tom, who retired. So he had Kevin Russo, who's second time he was at the TT, I believe. Kevin Russo is currently leading the World Championship, the Sidecar World Championship. So they were a great pairing, but they had a big off in the first week and got injured. So we wondered whether they'd get back. They got back for the second race, but not the first race. So it was always going to be, can they take that win again in the second race if the Birchall Racing outfit is back on the grid? And they did. But the Birchalls were second, and then third and the second race was Alan Fownes on the first race. Sorry, Alan Fownes and Rhys Gibbons. Rhys is a newcomer I just mentioned before. And who came second on that was the Fownes Racing team. And then they came third, and they're all related, you know, they've all got family from the Alaman, you know, yeah. Their mum's. It's all just a huge Manx link. It's like the Manx Massive taking over the podium. And then you get to race two. And Molly, who's Dave Molyneux, who's got the most, he's now got 18 TT wins in the sidecar. So the most amount of wins at the TT is legend. Just turned 60. It was his 60th start in the second race. Oh, he had a new passenger, Jake Roberts, who is, it's his godson. He's only 20, I think Jake is. Newcomer. And they got third. And the Crows, Jake's mum used to babysit the Crows. And of course, Jake's his
of course
son.
They did.
It's all like, what? Yeah. It was amazing. Again, that was a really emotional one. It was just history. I was like blubbering in the whipping. It was ridiculous. But it was, yeah, really, really special moment in TT history for the Manx people and for TT. It was just, it was great. So hats off to those boys, and more to come from them too.
It is that sense of everyone knowing each other, but to do it in that kind of hyper-realised reality of, but they're all flying around this course at 120 miles an hour, you think, with that tension in the paddock, is it gives, kind of makes you out in a bit of a cold sweat, actually, doesn't it?
Well, imagine that, you're ripping around and you've got your godson hanging on. I mean, that's even more, you know, it's not just you know the person.
And your former babysitter stood behind the wall. You're right, you can fly past. Anyway, quick bit of mid-show housekeeping for you all, folks. Please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from, so you never miss an episode, or you can watch it all on YouTube. All of this chat about the TT, Ewan, is really kind of getting the juices flowing.
Yeah.
We had our lovely producer, Dave. He's kind of wrecked it for us, hasn't he, this year. It just sounds like we've got to go. Hayley's going to treat us, show us everyone, introduce us to everyone. It sounds like we could get it all boxed off.
You say he did a recce. No, he didn't. He wound us up, kept sending us pictures of him drinking beers, hearing bikes going past at 200 miles an hour, making us jealous when we're at home looking after
all
the kids.
All of his famous mates.
Yeah. But Hayley, seriously though, if we get it officially on here from you, and you invite us over, then they're going to have to find a budget to send us over there. EasyJet or whatever, I'm not bothered. But we need to go. I've been to the island before, but not for the TT. And every time I watch it on TV, I'm like, I have to go. And genuinely, me and Prats could come over. We can do the podcast from there next year.
Yes, you could. Get yourselves over.
Because you're in charge of the Isle of Man. That's what we're officially saying here.
That is me. I will sign everything off. Have you ever heard of what the flag means? You know, our flag is red with three legs on.
Yeah.
The three legs means whatever way you throw me, I will always stand.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah.
Like even after 25 rum and cokes?
Good luck with that.
No, I'd love to go because I just want to feel, you know, I've done MotoGP, British Superbikes, all that. I get it, and it's amazing, and you see the speed of the bikes, and you can get an appreciation of the skill of the riders. But I think there is nothing on earth like the TT, and I can honestly, my hairs stand up on the back of my neck just thinking about it. I just want to feel the bikes. I just want to feel it, smell it, hear it. We've got to go.
Get yourselves here. I've met so many people over the last couple of weeks who say, oh, it was on my bucket list, I had to come. But once you do it once, there's no way that you can't come back. It'll be on your bucket list multiple times, though, can't it? So, yeah, get yourselves over here. Come feel it, smell it, hear it, do it.
That could be another thing for the Isle of Man as well. Come see it, feel it, smell it.
Yeah.
It's the Isle of Man. Give it a whiff.
There's a T-shirt in there somewhere.
Give it a whiff. Also, it won't just be the racing. It must be like the social side of things. You know, just meeting fellow like-minded people in the bars in the evenings. The whole vibe of the occasion just must be like nothing else.
Well, there's nowhere else in the world that it's so accessible, the paddock as well, and the people that are in it. And you see all the guys from that paddock out and about. And you know, there's concerts on. There's live gigs. There's a little festival, as you say, going on around a motorsport event. And everyone is so open and friendly. There's no clickiness. There's no, everyone is here for the same thing. And everyone's, it's just brilliant to see people connecting from all walks of life, all class of life, but all here for the same thing and just screaming and singing about the same stuff too. And whether it be the big names or whether it be the fans, everyone's here for the same thing and enjoying it at the same level, really, if that makes sense.
Is that what differs from other kind of factions in motorsport for you, Hayley? That the fact that you can rub shoulders with, I mean, I've tried to kind of comprehend it in footballing terms, but there's nowhere near it. You wouldn't see it be that welcoming around, say, like the top of the Premier League. You know what I mean? It's very kind of, that's us and you're there, and there's a big gap between the two, so make sure you know what that big gap is. Whereas with that, it just, I mean, you're wandering around with people at the very, very top of that profession that will come and say hello, have a chat, have a kind of a little bit of rapport, which is something I know that you really do value, don't you?
Yeah, I don't experience anywhere else, really. You know, like you go to, I love MotoGP, I love the British Superbikes, all the endurance racing, Le Mans, all of that, I've been lucky enough to work at it, and it's fantastic, but not one of them besides a TT has ever been as accessible than something like this on the Isle of Man. It's crazy. And that's what the fans appreciate. You know, you can wander around in the day if they're not going racing, and they'll have the windows down and the bikes are there. You can go and see the bikes. You can maybe even chat to them if they're around. But then, as I say, they'll be out in the evening or they'll... It's definitely a unique event from every angle.
Hayley, I love the fact that you point out that the riders are so accessible. You know, it's not like a Premier League footballer. You wouldn't see them mingling after a game or something like that. But what I like about the riders, it makes them normal. And they do seem to me to be normal, regular athletes who happen to be bloody amazing at what they do. But that makes a TT special as well, doesn't it? The fact that you can rub shoulders with the people who only yesterday or tomorrow or later on you're going to be watching tearing around the island.
Absolutely. You know, that someone like Hickey, for example, I watch what he does and I don't know how he does it. You know, he gives so much to the fans. He is very open. He's got so many, you know, he's a wanted man, so many media commitments. People want so much from him. but he still goes out on the bike. He still gives it to him, and then he still manages to go out on the bike and do what he does. Some like Michael Dunlop, he just doesn't really like the limelight, so he tends to shy away. You know, you'd be lucky to get to catch up with Michael Dunlop. You might see him in the tent, but you don't always get access to him because he's actually quite shy. That's the only reason why. It's nothing else other than him being quite a shy kind of character. Whereas someone like Hickey is very charming. He knows how to hold the space. He knows how to chat to people. He knows how to give what he can give and then get away and do what he needs to do. And many of them are like that. But I feel like when I watch Hickey, he seems to be a different, kind of slightly different level to the others and what he can give. It's amazing to watch. But even like Davy Todd, you know, you get to see these guys wandering around. And and then, you know, that Sidecar Paddock as well, they're so open and friendly and they're all looking out for each other. Like we had the TV team have done a great job this year and they've had a couple of new additions. And Patrick France, who's a former sidecar champ in many different series, he's amazing. And he got on the TV team and he was doing great. He was on the telly, he was on the TT Plus, everything. And then I walked into the Sidecar Paddock one day and he was with Michael Russell's team, Russell Road Racing. And he had the front, the fairing was off the sidecar and he was working on the brakes and the I'm like, he's still in his kit from where he's just been on the telly. I'm like, Patrick, what are you doing? I'm just helping him out because I know exactly what's going on. And what? He's getting his, like, shrubbed his, literally pulled his arms up and he was getting dirty and helping them out because he knew what needed to be done. So that's the sidecar lot for you. Honestly,
Hayley, let me just pick you up on something there because it's just occurred to me here because we're the three of us, and hopefully this doesn't make this an insider chat that if you're listening to this thinking, right, I'll turn it off now, because all of us have there's similarities in what we do as what you laughingly call a job as a profession, talking about particular sports that we know and love. And then you talk about former racers. You'd have had the same thing, former athletes coming and being in football in terms, it's pundits, isn't it? Former players coming and chatting. And it's we'll all know people that go, oh, I'll go and give it a go, easy peasy. And then you get some that come on, you think, oh, no, you got a bit quiet. Do you want to loosen up a little bit? Where's the really funny person a minute ago before the light came out? And I understand it's a learned skill and it's minutes under your belt, really. Do you get, well, this is to both of you, do you get the sense of ones that would be particularly good at that, that come along and instantly kind of the microphone fits straight away, they talk the same way they do off camera, and there's that real warmth and geniality to the people that come the other side and try and give you that insight, because it's fascinating to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think you kind of, some need coaching a little bit. you know, some of the sidecar lot can be a bit shyer because they don't tend to get too much light shone on them, do they? So they're under that light less than the solos are, I'd say, you know, if you look at the full picture. But yeah, some people are just naturals to it. You know, Hickey was a natural. David Todd's a natural. You know, Michael Dunlop isn't because he just doesn't like it and he doesn't feel, he just wants to go racing. He doesn't want to have to charm people. He doesn't want to have to speak, you know, he just wants to go racing. For sure, some people are like a duck to water. But some just need a little bit of practice and coaching, which, you know, we can do in other aspects in our lives as well, can't we?
Yeah, I think the same. I think, you know, stick to your strength. Some people are naturally, they have that charisma, they have that aura. You know, someone like Michael Johnson, I think actually is very good as a pundit because A, he's been there and done it as an athlete and you can't question his ability, but he also says it how it is. You get some people who are so media trained and think, oh, I better not offend anyone. But Michael Johnson, if someone's run badly, he don't care if he upsets them because he's Michael Johnson. And I love the fact he'll tell the punter watching at home exactly how bad that run was. So I think, yeah, some people go into their new life like you have done, Pratt. I'm not just saying it because you're my mate. I think you're thoroughly good at what you do, but you've got to enjoy what you do, because if you're having fun and you're obviously informative, people are going to enjoy watching you. If you're like a robot, they're going to switch off. Having said that, please don't turn off right now. Keep watching. Yeah.
Let's fully come away from robots because it's fantasy ride time. Ewan, lay it out to Hayley what we're after.
Yeah, so normally, Hayley, we ask someone, you're on your dream bike. You could be anywhere in the world on a dream road. What would be your playlist? But because you know so many amazing people, I'm going to switch it up a little bit. So I do want to know your dream ride. I want to know what bike you are on, what you're listening to, but who are you riding with? Anyone, dead or alive, you could be on a bike. You can be in a sidecar, whatever you want. Your fantasy ride with who, on what bike and what tunes?
Tunes. Whoa. Okay, great. So where I'm going to be riding, it might be a bit cliche, but I've been reading a book lately by a lady called Zoe Kano, and she never got a license until she was 50 and has written 5 books going off on her own on a bike now all over the world. So her first one I'm reading at the minute is about her doing the route, is doing it from Boston to LA on her own on a Triumph Bonneville.
Nice.
And that's the bike that I will eventually want to have in my house and be working on myself and be riding because I'm a big Steve McQueen fan. So I would want to do the Route 66. It's a cliche, but I would, because I love America. I love the States. I've got family there, so I could stop off and see them while I'm there. I'd want to do it with Steve McQueen, please. Yes, thank you. and then Jessie Coombs, did you ever, she's sadly not alive anymore, but she's a lady who died far too young, and she was trying to break like a land speed record when she did pass, and they got a foundation in her name now and everything. But some of the stuff she achieved in her short life was phenomenal. She was a badass, and I'd love to have got a time with her. And I think she'd be able to fix everything if anything went wrong.
A twofer, good company and very capable with the banners. Exactly. That's what you need.
And if I'm being honest, music wise, what really gets me going is all like vocally housey stuff. And that's what really gets me on the vibe. So it would be all sorts of classic vocal house music that I always turn to kind of keep me focused and lift me energy. And I'd hope the sun would be shining. And imagine doing that with Steve McQueen.
Oh my God. Oh. I was going to say, you wouldn't want to listen to music. You want to be chatting to him, wouldn't you? You'd be loving that.
Exactly. And James Dean, even someone like that, you know, like, oh God, the stories. But I'd say them too, but I could go on and on to keep adding people into that. We could go on a big road trip together, but yeah, that would be cool.
It sounds amazing. It just made me giggle at the top when you said, even if you're in a sidecar, I had a real kind of Wallace and Gromit vibes about your dream ride, just sat there with your helmet on looking out the window, like the side.
They did a parade lap and I went on a normal sidecar on the parade lap here on the Sunday, the 3rd of June, I think it was. And I felt like, I did feel like, look, like the naughty kid in the sidecar. I really did. Like, what is going on?
Sit still. Don't wave. Enjoy yourself.
Be quiet. Yeah, behave. Okay.
Well, this has been wonderful, Hayley. And it's been such a wonderful series, hasn't it, Ewan? Because, I mean, that's it for this week's Full Chat. Powered by Bike Show, of course. And that's it for the series. I feel a bit sad. It's the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. They will tailor a quote to your exact needs, whether you ride a scooter, a moped, or any type of bike.
Yeah, thank you so much to our wonderful guest today, Hayley Coxon. You've been absolutely brilliant. And thank you for rounding up the Isle of Man TT 2024 and bringing even more excitement to me. I am literally, when I shut this computer down, I'm booking. I'm not going to book a flight. Perhaps you get your butler onto it and you get your private jet warmed up.
Fix it, me book a flight. So I've got to pay for you now. What?
You need to get your boat booked and go over on your bike. Yeah, that's what you need to do.
Ride our bikes over. That would be the best way to do it. And if you've been watching this on YouTube, that is Ewan Thomas's bike over his right shoulder, which is, it's a thing of beauty, isn't it, Hayley? I mean, do you have a bike in your living room? Or I mean, you're not that ostentatious,
not
are you?
Yet. not that ostentatious. I would love to have one. And just, I mean, why would you not want to sit there and stare at that, though, to be honest?
You're talking about props or the
motorbike? Oh, you. You and all the bike. My God. Well, don't forget to follow us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so you never miss an episode. Or watch it, as I said, on YouTube. You can see inside Ewan Thomas's house and all of his bike collections and his motor kind of. I mean, you've got the other massive car as well, isn't it? That's a different podcast.
Oh, it's another
altogether.
Story. Yeah.
hopefully, you've enjoyed the series. We've absolutely loved it, haven't we, Ewan?
I've absolutely loved it. It's been brilliant. Today's been brilliant. All the episodes. Thank you very much. Until next time, goodbye.